Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. As promised, Jim Blackburn, who gets up in the middle of the night when he feels a song coming on, is our guest. Jim, longtime member of the Catholic Answers family and author of several Catholic Answers books, and ready to take your calls on anything, 888-318-7884. I say all that, but you know the real important thing about Jim. He's the founder of CatholicQuestions.com. CatholicQuestions.com, you can go to CatholicQuestions.com and get your Catholic questions answered. They have an app. They have a phone number. You can send them actual mail with a stamp on it if you were born before 1941. All kinds of ways to get your questions to Jim Blackburn. Hello, Jim Blackburn.
Hello, Cy Kellett. Thanks for having me.
Was I correct about you? Sometimes just there's a song gets in your heart and you wake up and sing in the middle of the night.
I you have to ask my wife. I don't remember that happening, but maybe she does. Did she tell you that?
No, but I bet if she did, she'd be like, "Blackburn singing in the dead of night." That's where I was going with that.
Oh,
boom!
Oh, gotcha.
Just drop that on you. I've been working on that all afternoon. Sorry.
Hey,
sorry, Jim.
One up beside there. No problem.
888. Did I make you laugh, John Versillo? I think I made John Versillo laugh. It's a miracle. 888-318-7884. No, I'm just saying that because you're a miserable person. I apologize, John. All right, we're going to get to the phones. I'm sorry. I'm being silly.
I know, John. He's not a miserable person.
No, he's not a miserable person. And two of his children are in the studio with us right now. So I'm just goofing on him because his kids are here. All right, tell me a little bit about Catholic Questions. Give me just the thumbnail, the nutshell of CatholicQuestions.com.
Well, you know, we started it when Catholic Answers closed the Q&A department to focus on bigger things in apologetics. And yet, since I had been in the Q&A department for 10 years, I wasn't still there when Catholic Answers closed it, but I knew there was a need for it, and so did other people. And so just prior to the holiday season 5 years ago, you know, we just wanted to bring back an opportunity because we know the holidays from Thanksgiving through New Year's, especially at Christmas time, is a big time when families get together and a lot of people talk about the taboos of religion and politics and want to be able to talk about the faith and get their questions answered. So, you know, we just provided an opportunity for that. We set up a website, and it was so well received that after the first of the year, we kept it going for a couple of months, and eventually, well, we've never stopped. We now have, there are seven of us. I have six staff apologists who help answer questions. I answer a lot of them myself. We're all volunteers, so we're doing this because we love apologetics, and we love one-on-one. We love helping people one-on-one, just like we do here on the radio show. So, but we've since expanded into apps. We have apps for Android and Apple devices, and we have, of course, you mentioned the website. You can ask your question right there. We have an email address. We have a phone number. We have a P.O. box to send us mail, and we get questions from all of these different ways that people like to use, and we answer every question that we receive. It might take us a day, sometimes two business days, really, at the most. But by and large, we answer questions either the same day or the following day. It's not quite as responsive as being able to call the radio show, but, you know, we're, like I say, we're all volunteers. We have other things going on, but these questions are important to us, and we want people to get their answers. So that's what we do. And we're, you know, going on, it'll be 5 years since Catholic Questions was founded. That'll be 5 years in September, and it'll be 5 years in at Thanksgiving that we opened our doors to questions. So
that is wild. And I remember being there on the ground floor. I remember talking to you as you were founding it. And here we are 5 years later.
Yeah, and we also now sponsor Catholic Answers Live because a lot of the people who ask us questions hear about us, you know, on the radio show, or they're fans of Catholic Answers or fans of Catholic Answers Live, and they want to be able to do what they can do on the radio show. So we have a little bit that I'm sure our listeners have heard that mentions if they would rather answer their question in private, they can contact Catholic Questions, and that's what we do. So, you know, we're all happy to be doing it. We, if I can mention this, we do have to pay the bills. And one of the ways we actually, the main way we do that is through donations. So we don't have a radio drive that we can do. We don't have big fundraising campaigns, but we do ask that, you know, if you like what we do, support us in your prayers and your thoughts, but also if you can spare to support us financially. Every little bit helps because we do have bills to pay, and we're all volunteers. None of us get paid, but we have bills that we have to pay, you know, for the website and the apps and all of those peripheral things associated with Catholic Questions. So if we're not supported by Catholic Answers, although we work in conjunction sometimes with Catholic Answers, like I'm doing today, but we are our own entity, our own. We're a nonprofit corporation, and so donations are tax deductible. And if people like what we do, ask.
Now
support
that,
us, please.
Was that really the nutshell version, or was that I can't tell? Was that the long version or the nutshell version?
That was probably the long version.
I wasn't sure. because I don't know if you know what nutshell means, because.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, Jim. I'm just messing with you. 888-31. Now you look so hurt. Now I feel terrible. 888-318-7884. Jim Blackburn's our guest. It's Ask Me Anything, and there ain't no lines open. Sorry, parents. There are not any lines open. John is in Southern Maryland listening on 1160 AM. Go ahead, John, with your question for Jim.
Hey, guys. Quick question.
Hi, John.
When I was going through OCI... Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
When I was going through OCIA, coming into the Catholic Church, it'd be 2 months on the 19th of this month. They were talking about how Jesus or God judges you at the exact time of your death, and it's either heaven, hell, or purgatory. How does the soul know when it's in the place, in one of those two places that it's supposed to be or deemed to go, whether you're in heaven, hell, or purgatory? How does your soul know when you're in that exact place?
Gotcha.
Okay, that's a great question. And John, welcome to the church. We're really glad to have you. When you said OCIA, I knew it was somewhat recent because it used to be RCIA, but now it's OCIA.
Right.
The Catechism of the Catholic Church mentions. In paragraph 1022, you mentioned that what the church calls the particular judgment, and that means that when
right.
we die, our fate is sealed. We have determined, actually, we have chosen ourselves at that point. If we're going to go to heaven, that's really a choice to follow Jesus and be true to him and love him and love others. Those are the two greatest commandments. If we choose not to do those things and we reject God, then we're choosing to eternally be separated from God. But at death is when that judgment comes. And paragraph 1022 of the Catechism says, each man receives his eternal retribution in his immortal soul at the very moment of his death, in a particular judgment that refers his life to Christ, either enters into the blessedness of heaven through a purification or immediate and everlasting damnation. So that judgment at that point is a meeting, if you will, with Christ himself, where Jesus is declaring that judgment, which we have chosen, and it happens at the moment of death. So, you know, that's when we say, you know, we're going to go meet Jesus when we die, or someone has gone to be with Jesus, who meet Jesus. You know, that's that judgment that we will each experience at the moment of death. And we'll know then what is going to happen. Either we go directly to heaven and enjoy the beatific vision and all of that entails, or we are separated from God eternally. That heaven option might come with purgation, where we'll know that there is some attachment. We still have to sin. There are some consequences of those sins that we might still have to deal with, and that's what would be taken care of in purgatory. The book of Revelation tells us that nothing unclean shall enter heaven, and the book of Hebrews, letter to the Hebrews, says that we should strive for that perfection without which one cannot enter heaven. So we must be perfect and clean to enter heaven. But we can die in God's friendship without that perfection and cleanness. It's not unworthiness for heaven, but it's something needs to be done before we can enter it. And that would be then the state of purgation. But that is what we will know at the moment of our death, in really in what would seemingly be a meeting with Jesus himself.
Does that get to
Sean?
Is that okay, John? That makes sense?
Oh, yeah. I understand.
Okay.
It's more clear now.
Very good. All right. Well, God bless you, brother. Thank you for the call. We got to take a quick break. Right back with more Jim Blackburn on Catholic Answers Live.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
This is Jim Pinto, Director of EWTN Media Missionaries. EWTN Media Missionaries prayerfully take EWTN to parishes and the community through the print and electronic media we provide. You can help EWTN share the good news by becoming a media missionary. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Catholic Answers Live. Jim Blackburn is our guest. I do not have any idea why this is, but this has been going on for a long time. Jim Blackburn brings out the goofiness in me. I have no idea. I do not know what it is, but out it comes when Jim Blackburn's here. And I'm always happy when he's here. Apparently, our callers are happy he's here because every single line is full. Off to Washington we go. Jackson is watching on YouTube. Welcome, Jackson. Go ahead with your question for Jim Blackburn.
Hi.
Hi, Jackson.
I want to convert to Catholicism, but my wife is not too keen on it. She, her family used to be Catholic, and they left during the sex abuse scandal, and she's worried about what they'll think, and there's just a lot of stuff there. So I was wondering, how do I have the conversation with her to keep it going so I can make that journey?
Okay. Jackson, that's a great question, and it's something that a lot of people have to deal with. When someone we love not only doesn't understand why we're converting or the choices that we're making, but even wants us not to make that choice for some particular reason. Now, I want to preface what I'm going to say here with the fact that I'm not a spiritual director, okay? This is a question, Jackson, that would be best discussed with your spiritual director. Your spiritual director, if you don't have one, contact your parish and ask the parish office for a referral to a spiritual director, or go online. There are organizations similar to Catholic Questions that do spiritual direction. But we're apologists. We answer really questions about the faith, not such personal issues as how do I deal with my wife when I want to enter the church and she's not keen on that. However, that said, I might have some suggestions for you. You mentioned one of the reasons that she would not be keen on you entering the Catholic Church, and that was the idea of scandal in the church. And that's something that I wrote an article on for Catholic Answers magazine some years ago, and you can find that at Catholic Answers, the Catholic.com, the website, Catholic.com. Just go there and type in my name, pull up my profile, and look for the article Scandal, Nothing New Under the Sun. There are people who probably in the first century didn't want their loved ones to follow Jesus because of Judas. You know, Judas was a betrayer. He betrayed Jesus for money, and you know, he was all about money. And yet Jesus was the guy who appointed him as an apostle, made him an apostle. So people might look at that and say, well, you know, the church, there's got some corruption in it. One of the very guys Jesus appointed as the original 12 apostles betrayed him, and I don't want to be part of a church like that. Well, think about the boat you would be missing in the first century if you chose not to follow the apostles, but follow Jesus in the church that he established at that time. Peter later would deny Jesus three times, and it would only be after the resurrection that Jesus appears to Peter and reconciles with him on that. There, St. Paul rebukes Peter when you know, Peter is seemingly being anti-Semitic, let's say, and St. Paul rebukes him to his face, he says, about that. There, down through the history of the church, there have been these types of things happening. You know, these are just a few we see right in the New Testament. Should they prevent us from entering this church that Christ founded? Absolutely not. Jesus founded the church on Peter and the apostles, and they're men, and they're men who are sinners, like the rest of us are. And so if there are sinners in the church, that should not be a reason that we avoid becoming part of the church, which the church itself is holy. It's founded by Jesus. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus says, I will build my church. And he built a church. He, right after that, he says, you are Peter. He gives Peter the keys to the kingdom of heaven. And so Peter is singled out as the head of that church, that Jesus ascends into heaven, he leaves those keys with Peter. The apostles continued, the ones who remained at the Last Supper learned that the Holy Spirit would be coming to guide them into all truth and to bring to their memory all that he had taught them. And we see that happening on the day of Pentecost, that the Holy Spirit comes down upon them in a very special way. And from that point on, they've continued, and their successors have continued to, in a very holy way, administer the church, administer the sacraments that Jesus founded. And we don't want to miss out on that because some of these men made terrible mistakes or sinned terribly. There have been popes, even down through the history of the church, who have been snakes. You know, they've not lived the holiest of lives. Yet that should not keep us from Jesus. So I recommend that if that's a big issue you want to approach your wife or her family with, check out that article that I wrote, Scandal, Nothing New Under the Sun, and go from there. But ultimately, Jackson, you are responsible for your relationship with Christ, and that's a decision you have to make. And Jesus told us that sometimes there would be difficulty among family members, people who choose him even when their family members are choosing something else. Jesus ultimately says, if you choose your family member over me, and I would say, Jesus mentions father and mother, son and daughter. Oh, I would add to that wife. We've got to choose Jesus over everyone else. That must be the primary relationship in our lives. As difficult as that may be to overcome, it's that important to your eternal life. So I recommend that you check out that article, seek spiritual direction and maybe have your wife join you to have a joint meeting with the spiritual director to talk about this and how important this is to you. And hopefully she will support you, even if she's not going to become Catholic herself. Hopefully she will support you in following your conscience and maintain your relationship with Jesus to the fullest through the church that he established for you. So I hope that helps, Jackson.
Thank you, Jackson. As I said, line's full, so on we go. Samuel is in New York. Samuel, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Jim Blackburn.
Hi, thank you. Quick question. So I'm a convert to Catholicism. This Easter Vigil, I was baptized into one of the Eastern Catholic rites. And I'm very happy to be part of the faith, but still some nagging questions. So when it comes to venerating saints and asking intercession, I was reading through my Bible the other day when it kind of dawned on me that why does there seem to be not as much talk about saints in the Old Testament, like the Old Testament prophets that we ask for intercession, like David, the patriarchs, Moses, any of those figures? Because often when we talk about like patron saints or intercessory prayers, we're talking about New Testament saints or people after that, such as Middle Ages in that time period.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a great question, Samuel. What I think is the answer to this, and I'm not an expert on this particular topic, but it seems to me that when we look to saints, you know, we look to saints who are examples, who have been examples of what we want to be in our lives. When we choose a patron saint, we choose a saint who has something very much in common with us. And who are we going to have more in common with, the New Testament saints or the Old Testament saints? You know, the Old Testament saints are indeed, many of the patriarchs and the prophets are saints. So there are even Catholic churches under those names. You know, we have St. David Catholic Church, for example. I know that one of my brothers chose Daniel as his confirmation name, a good Old Testament saint, maybe because he something about Daniel appealed to him, and he felt a connection there. But by and large, I think we're going to feel that connection, recognize that connection with saints who were Catholic, who were followers of Christ, followers of the Catholic Church, who lived a life that we can see ourselves living. You know, you mentioned the prophets. Jesus says that John the Baptist is the greatest of the prophets. You know, he's the last of the prophets. He's that connection between the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. He's the precursor to Jesus, the one who announced him. As the greatest of the prophets, you know, we're going to probably appeal, he's going to appeal more to us than some of the Old Testament prophets do. So I just think it's a natural thing for Catholics to have that connection, feel that connection, have something strong bond, something in common with a New Testament saint or beyond, you know, a New Covenant saint down through the history of the church than we are to the Old Testament ones. But the Old Testament ones are not off limit. We can pray to them and use their names for as confirmation or baptism. That's just may not be quite as appealing as someone we have more in common with historically as a Catholic, as a Christian, as a follower of Christ.
Samuel, thanks. I'm going to keep moving, try to get everybody on. Ariel in Oregon. Thank you for waiting, Ariel. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, I was wondering if it is possible for a person to be in good standing with the Catholic Church and also be a annihilationist, also known as conditional immortality, in any kind of, you know, in any kind of sense, like even if there was a qualified form.
Okay, Ariel, could you expound on that a little bit more? What do you mean by an annihilationist? What specifically, maybe, would you see might be opposed to Catholic teaching?
So like the Christian idea of annihilationism, basically, person gets, you know, resurrected after they die, face judgment. And then instead of being consciously eternally tormented, they're simply annihilated.
Okay.
And, so the potential problem there, could be that the Catholic Church teaches that there's a hell. And so, you know, why is there this hell if people end up annihilated, you know, on Judgment Day or around there, why would you end up with this eternal place?
Right. And so you're asking if you're asking if holding a belief like that would be contrary to the teaching of the church. And yes, it would be. The church teaches the immortality of the soul. The soul, the human soul, is a spiritual, the spiritual aspect of us. And that is something that is not destroyed. That is something that when God creates a soul at a human being's conception, that soul is eternal. That soul will live on past bodily death, and it will continue to live on either in heaven or hell. And that one thing that might help understand, you know, you characterize it as being live on and being tormented for the rest of eternity. Keep in mind that's a choice the person is making, a choice against a relationship with God. And let's pick that up after the break.
All right, we'll take that break. Right back with more Ask Me Anything with Jim Blackburn on Catholic Answers Live. The number, 888-318-7884. Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Father Jeff Kirby, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme, Go Make Disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carlo Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they are allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. Join me for Beacon of Truth today at 4 p.m. Eastern.
On the next Beacon of Truth, we're talking about Pentecost and Soulful Psalm 90.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest, Jim Blackburn, this hour, it's Ask Me Anything. And there's one line open right now, so you can get on it if you've got a question. 888-318-7884 up in Oregon. Ariel asking about whether you can still be in good standing with the Catholic Church and be an annihilationist, which essentially means that rather than be cast into hell, those who are destined for eternal punishment would merely go out of existence, lose their existence. And so, Jim, you were explaining, no, that it's not consistent with the teaching of the Catholic Church because the Church teaches the immortality of the soul. But I think we had then to get to the part about what that does to your good standing with the Church.
Yeah, and if a person were to reject the church's teaching on the immortality of the soul, I mean, it would take that, I think, for someone to be an annihilationist. So That to me would be a contradiction with church teaching. And so I don't think there may have been Catholic writers who've written about this, speculated about it, but I think the church would vehemently oppose that. Hell is real. It's a choice. It's something that, you know, this life, this little flash in the pan of what we call life, is an apprenticeship. You know, it's an opportunity for us to choose to live eternally with God or choose to live eternally separated from Him. And those are the only two choices. And if we choose to live eternally separated from Him, that's what we call hell. The torment of hell will be the realization of what is lost, because God created us to live forever with Him eternally in heaven. And that is the choice that we can make that will eternally fulfill us, satisfy us, and be the ultimate of all of our longings will be fulfilled in heaven. Hell will be the eternity of that, of not having that those fulfilled, and knowing what we chose against when we had this short little opportunity to do it. You know, the angels made this choice just at the moment of their creation. God gave them, infused them with knowledge, and they were able to make that choice for a choice for or against God. And right there we see God didn't annihilate the angels who chose against Him. You know, we call them demons. We call Him Satan. And they continue to oppose God, and yet they still exist. We know they still exist. Annihilation hasn't occurred for them. Why would we then think it's going to occur for human beings? But the bottom line to the question is the church teaches the reality of both heaven and hell, and both are eternal. And the immortality of the soul is a teaching of the church that we can't deny that without losing good standing with the church.
I'm going to leave that there for you, okay. Ariel. I hope that was helpful to you. But I'm just looking at lots and lots of people on the line. The number is 888-318-7884. We'll try to get to everybody, but on we go. Jim, are you on social media at all? Do you do any social media or anything like that?
Glad you brought that up, Si. One of our apologists, her name is Colleen, she recently became the social media liaison for Catholic Questions. So if someone has ever become a subscriber to our Instagram page or followed us on Facebook, prior to Colleen taking this over, you didn't see a whole lot. Well, now that Colleen is doing this, you're seeing a lot more. Over the past month or so, she's got several posts. She's introduced several of the apologists. She's just doing a great job with it. So I'd encourage people to give another look to the Catholic Questions Facebook page and our Instagram page. Send us a friend request or follow us, and you'll see some great things that are coming out from Colleen and hopefully the other apologists at some point on our own social media. So, yeah,
right.
Thanks for asking, Si.
You're welcome. Back we go to the phones. Norman is in Salem, Missouri, watching on YouTube. Hello, Norman.
Hi, how are you? I just had a quick question. I don't want to take up too much time. Basically, I want to know, how can I be a more genuine follower of Jesus? Like, I want to be honest with Jesus and stuff. Like, but I don't want to like fake it. You know, I don't really like that whole fake it till you make it. I want to be able like to just listen to what He says. You know, just like what the Bible says and stuff. What He teaches us and everything. I don't like. I just want a more. How do I have a more genuine relationship with Jesus?
Beautiful. That's a beautiful question.
That is a great question. And Norman, a long time ago, I'm a cradle Catholic, but a long time ago, I met a Protestant pastor, and there was a specific reason behind it. I wasn't an apologist yet at the time, but he asked me the question when he first met me. The first words out of his mouth were, "So, do you know Jesus?" And those were strange words coming to me as a kind of a nominal Catholic. I didn't know what to make of that. Of course, I said, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm Catholic. I believe in Jesus. But those words rang in my head for a long time, and I did a lot of research. What's it mean to know Jesus, and what's it mean to have a relationship with Jesus? And I did write an article about this for Catholic Answers magazine many years ago. In fact, it's titled, Do You Know Jesus? And I'd recommend, Norman, go to Catholic.com and look that up, and you'll read my experience in this. And what I would say to you, in addition to all this, is Jesus, when he was asked what the greatest commandment was, he said the first and greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all that we are, we must love God with. But he didn't stop there. He went on and said, the second greatest commandment is like it. It's love your neighbor as yourself. All the rest of the commandments, everything else is under the umbrella of love of God and love of neighbor. Those are the two most important things. So, Norman, focus on love of God and love of neighbor. Love of God, Jesus said, if you love me, you keep my commandments. So love of God, a lot of that is about living a moral life. The Ten Commandments, a lot about morality, a lot about honoring God and loving others, but also about part of loving others is living morally. We don't cheat on our wives. We don't murder people. We don't lie, all these kinds of things. That's one of the ways we love Jesus. And then love of neighbor. You know, James, in his epistle, talks a lot about how we love neighbor, what good works are, and how we go about caring for the needy, the poor, the hungry, and widows, and taking care of helping to take care of our fellow man. So those are the two big things. And if you want to have a more genuine relationship with Jesus, concentrate on those two things in your life, and your life will have new meaning in Christ, and you will be closer to him. It will come about naturally just by following him. All right, Norman, and check out that article, Do You Know Jesus, at Catholic Answers.
Yes, I will. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Norman. Thank you for the call. Thank you very, very much. Teresa's in Eugene, Oregon. Teresa, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Jim.
Yes, hi. I wanted to know why the major Eastern Rite patriarchs aren't considered to be cardinals, or when they're made, you know, patriarchs for the first time, why aren't they automatically considered to be a cardinal? Thank you.
Okay, well, it's the Pope, whoever is the reigning Pope, who determines who a cardinal will be. I mean, he'll have a College of Cardinals already, but who will then become future cardinals? And that's up to him to decide. And I suppose a lot of, I don't know in particular why a Pope might not choose an Eastern Rite patriarch, but he maybe just doesn't have that much involvement with them, or hasn't over the course of his career and in his holy life, maybe hasn't interacted with them as much. I couldn't speculate on why, beyond that, why a Pope would choose to select some particular cardinal or not, or some particular person to be elevated to cardinal. We've seen that, well, just in recent times, you know, Pope Francis, he appointed a lot of cardinals, and the cardinals he appointed were ones who very much followed his ideology, his the way he lived out his Catholic life, and he chose cardinals who chose to focus, or bishops who chose to focus and continue to focus on the things that Pope Francis thinks are the most important, or thought were the most important in the life of the hierarchy of the Church. So I think it's just natural that we're going to see more a Pope making those kind of choices, but I can't speculate on beyond that, really. So sorry, okay. I couldn't be more help, Teresa. If you want to contact me at Catholic Questions, just go to the website. Maybe one of our other apologists has more insight on that. I'll be happy to see if we can get more details, a more helpful answer on that.
But that brings us to the break, Teresa, so we'll leave it there. Right back with more Ask Me Anything with Jim Blackburn on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I am a very happy, grateful revert to the faith. About 12 years ago, I was surfing the channels, and I found EWTN. I didn't even know it existed, and I heard Mother, and remembered that years ago, I had told a Catholic nun at a church in Boston that I was visiting that I missed the faith, and she said, "You will come back." And when I was listening to Mother Angelica, I remembered that.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Lots and lots of calls today. I've been quite busy, and that's always very, very nice. It's Ask Me Anything, and that's always nice, too. Jim Blackburn's here, and we're going to La Crosse, Wisconsin now. Mason is in La Crosse, Wisconsin, watching on YouTube. Mason, go ahead with your question.
Hey, my question was, I recently was on YouTube watching a video about an Eastern Orthodox priest talking about the adoration of the Eucharist, and I kind of wanted to know why he didn't like how Catholics did the adoration of the Eucharist, paraded around, prayed to it. I think, and I don't want to misquote him, but it sounded like his sentiments was, that's the Messiah, we should have communion and be done with it. So I just wanted to know, why do, as Catholics, we, you know, directly pray to it, parade it, you know, adorate it? So that's my question.
Well, for one thing, we reserve the Eucharist, you know, for communion to the sick, and for, let's say, communion services when a priest isn't available for a mass. And I mean, that's how Eucharistic adoration began, is the recognition of what is that in the tabernacle? Well, that's Jesus in there, and we should be adoring him. And you know, we haven't consumed this Eucharist; it's been set aside for a future purpose. But while it's there, it is him. It's the real presence of Christ. You know, the Eucharist is the source and summit of the Christian life, and it's that important to us that even once we've received Jesus in the Eucharist, when the Eucharistic hosts, the consecrated Eucharistic hosts have been reserved, that's, we still recognize his real presence there, and so we don't stop. You can read about this in the Catholic Encyclopedia at Catholic.com. There's a good article in there on Eucharistic adoration that explains the history behind it. And we have to keep in mind that the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, by and large, for the last 1,000 years, have been separated. And there have been differences in our practices. And so our practices have led us to adoration, times of adoration, and the recognition of Jesus and the reservation of Jesus in the Eucharist, in the tabernacle, and all of this. And we haven't seen that in the Orthodox Church, just going quite that route. So that would be what I would say is the thing that led to it, or that led to the separation of why we do it and they don't, is we came up differently over the last 1,000 years. This is a practice of the Church. It's not it's doctrinal that Jesus is the real presence of Christ is in the Eucharist, and that's him. body, blood, soul, and divinity. That's certainly a dogmatic teaching of the faith. But what we do with that in reserving it in the tabernacle, and then the recognition of that he's available for adoration in a very special way there is a practice of the church that has come up separate from Orthodoxy. So why the Orthodox don't emulate us in this way, or I can't answer for them, but it's a beautiful thing in the Catholic Church.
Mason, thanks very much for the call. The number, 888-318-7884. It's Ask Me Anything. Jim Blackburn is our guest, and we're going to Cincinnati. Josh is in Cincinnati, listening on 740 AM. Welcome, Josh. Go ahead with your question.
All right. You know, this occurred to me kind of around Easter time. It's funny when you read the same stories in the Bible over and over again. Sometimes something new just kind of jumps out at you.
Yes.
That you never thought of before.
Right, exactly.
So, and Matthew, I got this question here. This has kind of been on my mind. When Jesus goes to Pilate, they have their interchange. Pilate seems to want to let Jesus go. Pilate seems to not want to immediately crucify him, but partially because his wife has a dream. It says his wife was warned in a dream. So my question is, like, where did that dream come from? Some people think it was sent from God to, like, try to get Jesus off the hook, but the scriptures had to be fulfilled, right? So it couldn't be from God. Some people say from Satan, but I think there's other things Satan could have done if he saw the way this puzzle was going to be completed or not. I just kind of want your idea on that. Like, where did that dream come from?
Wait, there's one other possibility. What if it wasn't to get Jesus off the hook? It was to get Pilate off the hook. It was to save Pilate's soul.
But in doing that, wouldn't that have meant that Jesus wasn't crucified?
Oh, no. I don't think so. The manner would have been different, but God's plan. God can account for our free will in his plans. So I don't think it would have meant that. But go ahead, Jim Blackburn. What do you think of?
Yeah, no. This is really a question of speculation. I love hearing you guys talk about it. We can't know. It hasn't been revealed to us. A lot of the whys of why did this happen to this person and that. But I think we can see maybe it tempered somewhat Pilate's own. His own perspective on the matter, or maybe it didn't. Maybe it he thought, well, you know, I can't listen to that. But it's an interesting part of Scripture. What I would do, you know, you might check out a Catholic commentary and see what the commentators have to say about it. But whatever the case, it's going to be it's really speculation. We can't know for certain because God hasn't really revealed it to us.
What do you think, Josh?
Okay. It's just something that was on my mind that jumped out at me for the first time after 40 years of reading the same Easter story. So I don't know why it never crossed my mind before.
Just send me that question at Catholic Questions, and I will send you I can't get into all this on a radio show, but offline, or off the radio show, off the air, I can send you some of the speculations that maybe some of the church fathers have said about this, or that other Catholic commentators have said about over the years, to maybe help you make more sense of it. But we have to understand, when God doesn't reveal an answer to us, while we're free to speculate about it, that's what it is. It's theological speculation, and we're free to hold to it or reject that and embrace something else. But it's a curious question, and I appreciate it. So go to CatholicQuestions.com and send me your question, and I'll be happy to do more research on it.
Can I ask you one more quick one? I promise it'll be fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so I know the way we celebrate Christmas, like December 25th with the wise men there at the birth of Jesus, that's just kind of the way we celebrate it, right? But when it comes to Easter, the whole idea that for Jesus having to be in the belly of the earth for 3 days and three nights, is it possible then that he really was not killed on a Friday? Because Friday night to Sunday morning is not really 3 days and three nights. Is the way we celebrate Easter kind of traditional, kind of the way we do Christmas?
Well, no, I mean, there's the reckoning of time in the first century, the first century Judaism reckoning of time. Jesus was 3 days and three nights in the tomb, because any part of a day or night is considered a day and a night. And if Jesus was crucified on Friday, that would be a day and a night. Saturday came and went, a day and a night. Sunday, he was resurrected, a day and a night. So that for reckoning of time in the first century, that is true. And being crucified and dying on Good Friday makes sense. So we don't want to try to impose our own way that we account for time today on those words in the New Testament and in Jesus' own words about Jonah and his own being in the, you know, dying for the 3 days and the three nights. We don't want to impose the way we look at time today on that. We need to look at how Jesus understood it and how the first century Jews understood the reckoning of time. Okay, Josh?
Okay, I appreciate it. Yep.
All right, thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Karen in Portland, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Karen, we're getting a little bit near the end, so if as quick as you can, we'll get an answer for you.
Quick, and hey, I love your show. I'm just being argumentative.
Go for it.
I wanted to push back a little bit on the answer that said that you are jeopardize your good standing as a Catholic if you believe in annihilationism for three reasons. First, J.R.R. Tolkien batted that idea around, and he was absolutely a good Catholic. Second, I don't think the Church has ruled definitively on much concerning the eschaton. I mean, you can't believe in universalism, but I don't know about annihilationism. And third, that doesn't deny the immortality of the soul, because you can still believe in the immortality of the soul, but God isn't bound to it. So if he just decides at one point to eliminate all the souls in hell, I mean, how does that deny? I just don't see how that would put you in bad standing with the Catholic Church.
Okay, Karen, I appreciate that. I didn't say we can't bat these things around. In fact, that's what we're doing right now. That's what we did earlier. We can bat these ideas around, but if we settle on something that is contrary to the teaching of the Church, that puts us at odds. I didn't say it makes us a bad Catholic. I didn't use those words, but it might put us at odds with a teaching of the Church. And I don't see how annihilism or universalism, you know, everybody's eventually going to go to heaven. I don't see how either of those ideas are consistent with the constant teaching of the Church on the immortality of the soul, on the existence of heaven and hell, on the purpose of this life. This life is to make a choice and die in God's friendship or die willingly opposed to friendship with God. And part of the danger, I think, in believing in universalism or annihilationism is it takes so much of the weight out of the rest of the teaching of the Church. I mean, these are important decisions that we make. You know, a person might say, well, if I go to hell, I'm just going to be annihilated anyway. I don't really care. Or, well, you know, everybody's going to go to heaven eventually, so if I go to hell for a while, that doesn't really matter. You know, those are dangerous approaches to life and to eternity, to the faith. So I think when a person is adopting one or the other of those as his belief in opposition to these other things that the Church teaches, I think he puts himself at a certain odds with the Church and the faith. So I wouldn't take that lightly. Like I said, I don't. There have been great thinkers in the Church who have adopted a certain form of universalism. There have been people who speculate on annihilism, and those are things that we can talk about, bat around, speculate on, but we want to be careful not to oppose the Church teaching by embracing one too rigidly.
Karen, what a great question. I wish we had more time for a conversation. I would have liked to hear what you had to say about Tolkien, because I'm not familiar with that. But I'll tell you what, I'd like to send you a book. It's called The Big Book of Catholic Answers, if you'd like it, just to say thanks for asking a great question and being argumentative. Just hang on. We'll send you The Big Book of Catholic Answers if you want it. CatholicQuestions.com. They've got an app for your phone. They've got a website. They've got a phone number. They've got a mailing address. If you've got questions, go ahead to CatholicQuestions.com, the founder of which, Jim Blackburn, has been our guest. Jim, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Si. God bless you.
You too. We'll do it again tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.